Yep, it's recording.
Right. Okay, well today I've got a 10-point plan to talk to you, offer you some definitions, tell you a bit about what dying with dignity is and what it does and why it does it, and to point out to you what you already know, that assisted dying is not legal yet in Australia, and discuss further with you the main reason why that's so, and that's because of religious opposition. I want to talk a little bit about different moral approaches to the question of assisted dying. Look at popular religious opinion and get a little more technical in the theological sense, and look at three main theological issues. Thou shalt not kill being one, question of souls, and the sanctity of life. Then to turn to a more practical aspect, I want to look at some empirical arguments against dying with dignity and make some comments on those. And I'll finish up by saying, well, what's to be done? And is there any hope of having a rational argument about assisted dying? I shall finish at about 10 past, I think, now, ma'am, if that's all right. Let me offer you some definitions. I'll try not to make this too technical, but you'll hear phrases like dying with dignity, death with dignity, assisted dying, physician-assisted dying, physician-assisted suicide, voluntary euthanasia, or just euthanasia. They're all terms used in the debate, and they all refer to the termination of life on request of a patient. There are some important distinctions in the way these terms are used. Physician-assisted dying, or physician-assisted suicide, refers to cases where the patient asks a doctor for medication that he or she has to self-administer to bring about an earlier, more peaceful death. Voluntary euthanasia, in Europe they simply call it euthanasia in the legislation there, refers to situations where the doctor administers the medication. So you've got two different sorts of things. Physician-assisted dying is where you have to take the lethal drug. Voluntary euthanasia is where the doctor probably gives you an injection. In Switzerland, Oregon and Washington State that is, not Washington City, the patient must self-administer the medication. In Belgium, Luxembourg and the Netherlands, the law provides for both types of assisted dying. That's got the definitions out of the way, I hope.
That's a sign.
I have a little competition, yes. Johnny Cash, a bit hard. He's running around the window. I'll try and overcome him.
Ring of fire.
Our Dying with Dignity movement has the goal of law reform that will permit people who are suffering from a terminal or an incurable illness to receive medical help to end their lives. Now, is this a serious problem? Well, let me give you a couple of quotes from religious people. This is an Anglican archbishop, and he says, "Few matters are more frightening and sad for modern Australians than the loss of personal autonomy and the endurance of severe pain and suffering terminal illness can bring." Let me give you a quote from our own local Cardinal George Pell, and I'll be using a lot of quotes from his Pentecostal message last year. Cardinal George says, "The enormous distress caused by terminal illness, great pain and severe disability deeply affects everyone involved. To many people, the physical and mental pain and suffering means that their quality of life has diminished so much that they want to die." Cardinal Pell observes that, I'm quoting,
when pain, depression and loneliness are responded to effectively, the wish to die often recedes. Often perhaps, but not always. We in the Dying with Dignity movement think you should be able to ask for and receive medical help to end your life if that's what you want. Well, why is the legislation not here in Australia yet? There are laws permitting assisted dying in Europe and the United States, and they work effectively and safely. Popular support for assisted dying here in Australia and overseas is overwhelming. The most recent poll in Australia in October last year showed that 77% of Australians agreed that physician-assisted dying should be legalised. So why is it that politicians have not rushed to embrace this undeniably compassionate, popular and proven policy? You could ask the same question about same-sex marriage. The answer is principally because of religious opposition. And I'd like to talk today a bit more about that, and particularly about Catholic institutional opposition. And I'll give you a number of quotes from Cardinal Pell's Pentecostal message last year, entitled, "You Shall Not Kill." If you'll bear with me, I'll read out quite a lengthy statement on the Catholic Church's position about assisted dying, or voluntary euthanasia, or physician-assisted suicide. It's a sin that's never acceptable. And Pope John Paul II said, "Nothing and no one can in any way permit the killing of an innocent human being, whether a fetus or an embryo, an infant or an adult, an old person, or one suffering from an incurable disease, or a person who is dying. Furthermore, no one is permitted to ask for this act of killing, either for himself or herself, or for another person entrusted to his or her care, nor can he or she consent to it, either explicitly or implicitly, nor can any authority legitimately recommend or permit such an action." Not much room for compromise or exception there. In the UK, the Church of England, however, acknowledges that there may be exceptional cases in which euthanasia is morally permissible. Sadly, from my point of view, the Church of England doesn't see that as sufficient reason to change the law. So there are theological and empirical arguments against assisted dying and different kinds of moral theoretical approaches. Let me attempt to give a very simple summary of the different moral approaches. Are there universal, eternal moral truths that everybody should accept? And if there are, who's going to say what they are? There are at least two ways of looking at this. The deontological, is a big word I learnt recently, and the consequentialist. You don't need this, but I'll define it for you. The basic premise of deontology, that means duty, is that society operates around rules or duties that should never be broken. To act morally, people should always obey the rules, even if the consequences are harmful. The other way of looking at it, consequentialism, believes that actions should be judged by their outcomes, whether good or bad, so a moral act is one that aims to produce the best outcomes. Now, the Catholic Church takes a deontological view. Cardinal Pell says, I'm quoting again, "Our duties can be recognised by reason arising from our human nature. We recognise moral truths which cannot be avoided or denied, truths which are embodied in the natural law and confirmed by Christ himself and the Ten Commandments." He also says that many young Australians, I think he could have added old Australians, are moral relativists, at least in matters of sexuality and questions of life and death. But he regards that as confusion. However, I have to say that a claim that something is universally true doesn't make it so. You won't be surprised to learn that not everybody agrees with Cardinal Pell. As I said earlier, the Church of England accepts that assisted dying is morally sound in some circumstances. This is because it takes a consequentialist rather than a deontological view of morality. The Melbourne Unitarian Church, and I see you have its newsletter outside, says there is no single objectively correct answer as to when, if at all, life becomes a burden and unwanted. It is, other things being equal, the patient's own judgment of whether continued life is a benefit that must carry the greatest weight. And most significantly, I think, the majority of Catholics and Anglicans do not agree with their own organisation's position. Let me say a little bit about popular religious opinion. As long ago as 1998, 66% of weekly church-going Anglicans in the UK supported voluntary euthanasia. 84% of all Christians who went to church once a month also supported voluntary euthanasia. In Australia, more recently, in 2007, a news poll survey found that not only did 85% of Australians want choice over how they die, but of that 85%, that included 3 out of 4 Catholics and 4 out of 5 Anglicans. A more recent poll last year showed that 65% of Australian Christians believe in legal voluntary euthanasia. And for those people who are older than 65, the percentage went up to 73%. Individual opinion differs significantly from the orthodox view of the church hierarchy. Sometimes some of these individuals get together and form an organisation of their own. In Australia, we have a group called Christians Supporting Choice for Voluntary Euthanasia, who consider assisted dying to be totally consistent with Jesus' message of love and compassion, and with his golden rule: in everything, do to others as you would have them do to you. Well, having just quoted the Bible as an authoritative source, let's return a bit to Cardinal Pell's idea that the fifth commandment is an embodiment of natural law, an undeniable moral truth: thou shalt not kill. He also invokes the authority of the Bible. I'm quoting, "God is the creator and Lord of life. We receive it from him, and it is not ours to take from others. The fifth commandment makes it clear: you shall not kill." My proposition to you today is that there should be an asterisk after that fifth commandment to indicate that conditions apply. Cardinal Pell himself elaborates on God's word to say that you shall not destroy innocent human life. Presumably, it's acceptable to defend yourself against a potential murderer. Cardinal Pell needs to cover the doctrine of the just war. I'm sure you're all familiar with that. Not to mention killing other animals who are not human for food or sport. And the Bible itself makes it clear that thou shalt not kill is not an absolute command. The Old Testament is full of bloodshed and violence. God incites the Israelites to genocide against 7 nations. You must destroy them totally, make no treaty with them, and show them no mercy. The Israelites exterminated the Canaanites and smote the king of the Amorites and his sons and all his people until there was none left him alive. I could go on. Biblically sanctioned killing extends to what we would now see as pretty harmless activity. Those who break the Sabbath. What's today? Are to be executed.
Sabbath is Saturday, I think, but anyway. Today is the Lord's Day.
Students who disobey their parents and get drunk. Do you ever do that? You're to be stoned to death. Again, I could go on. Perhaps the fifth commandment really meant, thou shalt not murder fellow Jews. Indeed, having become in the last couple of days a more experienced biblical scholar than I was, I see that the New International Version says that the fifth commandment says, you shall not murder. These are all easy shots. My point is really that it is seriously inadequate to argue that a blunt statement like thou shalt not kill has universal and eternal applicability. It's also seriously deficient to claim as a God-given law a maxim that is just a social convention of the time. You shall not kill is a simplistic advocate's tool, not an intellectual basis for opposition to assisted dying. But while we're in the mood for theology, let me talk a little bit about souls and the sanctity of life. People are frequently puzzled that governments pass laws to protect dying animals from excessive suffering, but do not do the same for humans. Cardinal Pell offers a justification for that. He says, we might shoot a dying dog, but no human, no matter how old or sick, is just an animal. It is wrong to kill innocent human life. I repeat the point that fifth commandment needs to be read with a conditions apply caution. Apparently it doesn't apply to animals that are not human. But the cardinal has another more fundamental distinction to support his view. He says, nothing can take away our basic dignity as human beings, not even the humiliations and weakness caused by suffering and dying. We continue to exist in God's image, unlike the animals. Dying with dignity means accepting the human condition and the love and support of others as we wait for death to come naturally. It is never easy. So, we look like God, but a dog does not. Not only that, but we are superior. God also said, let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground. I'm told that theologians consider this means that God has a soul, but other animals do not. So somehow it is compassionate and humane, how ironic a word, to euthanize our dying and suffering pets, but not our dying and suffering people who are asking for help. A very common theological argument is that assisted dying would violate the sanctity of life. Again, not everyone agrees, and there are inconsistencies in the argument. If you believe in an all-powerful, all-knowing God, you might believe that issues of life and death are for God alone to determine, and that to interfere with this is playing God. I won't raise predestination and all its problems there, but how would you then justify transplants, triple bypasses, chemotherapy, blood transfusions? This hardly seems to be waiting for death to come naturally. It is apparently theologically acceptable to intervene in order to prolong our lifespan, but not to shorten it. You might have thought the opposite would be the case if heaven is such a great place. Cardinal Pell says that Catholic teaching and Australian law, oh goody, allow people to refuse burdensome or disproportionate medical treatment, even if death is likely to follow. To him, there's a fundamental moral difference between discontinuing futile medical treatment for a dying person and taking an active step to meet that person's request for help to end their suffering quickly. To others, including the Dying with Dignity movement, there is no moral difference. Let me have a look at some empirical arguments which can be tested because we have a very considerable body of experience now. Laws that permit assisted dying have existed in Switzerland since 1937, in the Netherlands and Belgium since 2002, and in Luxembourg since 2009. Assisted dying has been allowed by the courts in the Netherlands since 1984. In the United States, Oregon has had a Death with Dignity Act since 1997, and Washington State since 2009. Those who are opposed to law reform to permit assisted dying usually focus on two results that they see as inevitable: involuntary euthanasia and the killing of vulnerable groups who are thought undesirable. These consequences are supposedly part of a slippery slope. Let's look at involuntary euthanasia. Cardinal Pell says, and he's involving you in this, one important part of the Catholic task today, which we share with clear-headed humanists and humanitarians, that's obviously all you lot, is to explain that just as winter follows autumn, legislation to allow voluntary euthanasia or mercy killing would lead to widespread involuntary euthanasia, with many, perhaps a majority, of those euthanized being subject to the procedure without their consent and often against their will. This is because it is almost impossible, to put legal safeguards in place to stop it becoming involuntary euthanasia. He goes on to refer specifically to the Netherlands. He says, studies in the Netherlands have found that more than 50% of Dutch doctors feel free to suggest euthanasia to their patients, and 25% of these doctors admit to ending patients' lives without their consent. 550 people were euthanized without an explicit request in 2005. Now, there are two sentences there that conflate two things. The studies Cardinal Pell refers to in the first sentence were done in 1991, 20 years ago, and 11 years before the Netherlands introduced its euthanasia law. Since then, there have been government-sponsored nationwide studies carried out every 5 years, 1995, 2000, and 2005. Haven't yet seen the results of 2010. Now, may surprise you to learn that I'm quite happy to admit that Cardinal Pell is correct in one respect here. There were indeed 550 people whose lives were ended without an explicit request in 2005. What he did not mention, however, were the conclusions that two recent academic reports drew from those 15 years of official data. The first, in 2009, found that, quote, no slippery slope seems to have occurred, and, quote again, the frequency of ending of life without an explicit patient request decreased from 0.8% of all deaths in 1990 to 0.4% in 2005, bracket, approximately 550 cases annually. That's right, 550 in 2005. It was 1,030 approximately in 1990. That's an article published in the Journal of Bioethics Inquiry in 2009. It's been reported elsewhere as well. The second report I want to quote is from the British Journal of General Practice, 2010, and it provides an explanation of why some patients' lives were ended without their consent, something that Cardinal Pell doesn't address, as well as repeating the fact that recent studies have shown that the Act has not resulted in the often feared slippery slope. It finds that, and I quote, further analyses of the cases of ending of life without an explicit request show that these concern nearly always patients who are very close to death, are incompetent, i.e. mentally incompetent, but with whom the hastening of death has been discussed earlier in the disease trajectory and or with their relatives. You might infer from Cardinal Pell's blunt statement that doctors are malevolently ending many people's lives. In fact, their motives have been compassionate. There have been no prosecutions. Any involuntary euthanasia is clearly undesirable, but until we have a universal system of advanced care directives that applies in all circumstances, we'll continue to have situations when a doctor must make a hard decision, preferably in consultation and with the agreement of family, on what is in the best interests of the patient. We must continue to trust that the doctor is motivated by compassion and not by any personal interest. Open and transparent assisted dying legislation will make this more, not less likely. Let me turn to the question about vulnerable groups. Cardinal Pell says, euthanasia actually undermines the human dignity of everyone who is sick, vulnerable, dependent or disadvantaged. They become disposable, burdens, too expensive to keep. Father Frank Brennan, another luminary in the Catholic Church, says, vulnerable people will be sure to be put to death without their consent because others judge that their lives are complete or useless. Actually, research in 2007 showed that, and I'm quoting, the rates of assisted dying in Oregon and in the Netherlands showed no evidence of heightened risk for the elderly, women, the uninsured, people with low educational status, the poor, the physically disabled or chronically ill, minors, people with psychiatric illnesses including depression, or racial or ethnic minorities. A much more recent, very comprehensive review of assisted dying legislation by an expert panel set up by the Royal Society of Canada, produced its report late last year, found again there is no evidence from the Netherlands supporting the concern that societies vulnerable would be at increased risk of abuse. They go on to say what has emerged is evidence that the law is capable of managing the decriminalisation of assisted dying. You'd have to say that Cardinal Pell's description of the effects of assisted dying legislation was very poor scholarship indeed. His claim of a causal relationship with involuntary euthanasia and abuse of the vulnerable is flatly contradicted by the evidence. Sadly, this is typical. Well, as Mr. Lennon remarked once upon a time, what is to be done? What are we in the Dying with Dignity movement to do in the face of ideological certainty and severely biased analysis? To overcome a politically influential, well-funded and well-organised opponent, we need to continually expose errors of fact, biased interpretation and willful misrepresentation. And I think we need to demonstrate when sweeping assertions are based on faith rather than evidence. Well, what hope is there? I find it hard to imagine that the Catholic Church will display some flexibility any time soon, particularly if the attitude of Drusilla Clack is any indication. Now, you may not know Drusilla, but she is a character in Wilkie Collins's book, The Moonstone. She says, once self-supported by conscience, the true Christian never yields. Neither public nor private influences produce the slightest effect on us when we have once got our mission. We are above reason. We are beyond ridicule. We see with nobody's eyes. We hear with nobody's ears. We feel with nobody's hearts but our own. Glorious, glorious privilege. And how is it earned? We are the only people who can earn it. For we are the only people who are always right. That strike terror into your heart? Does me. We in the Dying with Dignity movement are not asking Drusilla to give up her faith, but we are asking her to accept that individual choice is a valid measure of morality in matters of life and death, and not, as Cardinal Pell sees it, a confusion. It's your life, your death. It should be your choice. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard. First of all, the statement...